Issues Etc. is listener supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Part two of a five-part weekly series straight ahead on bad ways to argue about abortion. This bad way finds, sometimes sadly, a welcome home on both sides of the abortion debate. It's called the ad hominem argument. To the man is what it means, and it that pretty well describes it. Arguing against the person with whom you're arguing rather than against their argument. It doesn't really get anybody anywhere, but this thing is so common on both sides of the abortion debate that sometimes it passes for a decent argument, which it is not. It's Wednesday, January the 14th. You can join us for the last half hour of this hour of Issues Etc. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Todd, always great to be with you.
This is such a common misstep in the debate, sometimes intentional, sometimes not, on both sides of the abortion debate. We hardly even notice that it's a bad argument.
You're really right, and it does happen on both sides, and it's regrettable that it happens on our side, but I think it's far more common that it happens with our critics. They accuse our position of not being a good one because they attack the individual instead of dealing with the evidence that we give for the pro-life view.
So give us an example. I mean, I'm sure that you've encountered this in your many debates with those who hold the pro-choice view. Give us an example.
Well, there's a street-level ad hominem, and then there's a more sophisticated ad hominem. The street-level ad hominem would be something like this. Oh, you pro-lifers oppose abortion? Are you willing to adopt all the children you don't want aborted? Now, the interesting thing about that is it does nothing to address the substance of the pro-life argument. Let's say, for example, that it were true that I'm a pro-lifer and I'm totally unwilling to adopt any children whatsoever. How does that in any way justify an abortionist killing those same children? I think the clear answer is it doesn't. A classic example would be if someone said to me, I'm unwilling to adopt your three sons, and then I replied, well, then I guess I'm okay executing them at noon tomorrow. Clearly, it doesn't follow from the fact that you're unwilling to adopt my children that I'm therefore justified killing them. Now, that's a street-level example. A more sophisticated one would be something like what Dennis Prager has put forward, the national talk show host, who, by the way, is a very good thinker, though I think he's, of course, mistaken on this point. Dennis's argument goes like this. Well, if you really believe abortion is murder, then shouldn't you be picking up a gun to go shoot abortionists? Because if you thought that someone was going to kill their toddler, you'd certainly use physical force to intervene if you needed to. So why wouldn't you do it here? And then he goes on to argue that fetuses in the first trimester are not human beings who deserve rights, because after all, pro-lifers aren't willing to pick up guns and go shoot abortionists who are killing first trimester fetuses. So those are the two variations of the ad hominem. One is a little more sophisticated. The other is just brute street level.
What's the – it has great kind of emotive effect. I mean, it has a tendency to kind of shut down or act as a trump card in many arguments when it really shouldn't. How does one extricate himself if they find themselves on the receiving end of the ad hominem? What's the best response?
The first thing we need to do is bring people back to the question, what is the unborn? Because the whole abortion debate pivots on that question. If the unborn are not human beings, killing them for any reason, including an alleged inconsistency in the pro-lifer's behavior, becomes a moot point. Because the reality is, if the unborn aren't human, kill as many of them as you want. But if they are human, then that's a whole different matter altogether. So you have to deal with the question, what is the unborn, before you answer the question, can we kill the unborn? And the ad hominem is an attempt to dodge that question. It's an attempt to make the pro-lifer's behavior the subject of discussion rather than the philosophical debate over the status of the unborn. So I always come back to the question, what is the unborn? And by doing that, I get back to the issue that really matters here instead of being sidetracked by a rabbit trail. So, for example, somebody comes to me and says, well, are you willing to adopt all these babies you don't want aborted? I will simply say to them, well, if you were unwilling to adopt my two-year-old, would that justify me killing my two-year-old? If the answer is no, then clearly my behavior isn't the issue. It's the status of the individual involved that matters, not my behavior.
Do pro-lifers sometimes inadvertently, even though the argument's never justified, do they inadvertently leave themselves open to an easy ad hominem attack?
I think they do when they get distracted by all the rabbit trails that people want to throw in our way. Most discussions over abortion are not principled discussions, and here's what I mean by that, Todd. They don't center on the key philosophical issues that are at the crux of the debate. They center on emotive issues, as you mentioned a moment ago. And the question then becomes, well, what are you doing to stop abortion? You say abortion's wrong. Well, are you willing to help all these mothers? Are you willing to adopt all these children? What do you want to do, throw women in jail and prosecute them and give them the death penalty if they kill a fetus? And it changes from what is the unborn to what are you doing behaviorally? And that simply will not do. My behavior does not determine the rightness or the wrongness of abortion. Let me give you a classic example. Is it possible that I could be an abortionist who kills fetuses for a living, but on weekends I do seminars where I talk to people about why abortion is wrong, and I give them solid philosophic and moral reasonings why it's wrong, but then during the week I end up killing them? Well, the reality is, even though my behavior does not match my rhetoric, meaning I claim that killing fetuses is wrong, but my behavior, of course, betrays that because I spend my time killing fetuses, could I still be right that the pro-life position is true? And the answer is yes. My argument for the humanity of the unborn stands or falls apart from my actual behavior.
You say that it's not just, say, the character that is often impugned when the debate turns ad hominem. It's also the pro-lifer's speech. What do you mean by that?
People will say, for example, that when pro-lifers say that abortion is wrong because it takes the life of an unborn human being without justification, we are then making the claim that abortion is a violent moral wrong, and that would inspire certain people then to react by taking deadly force against those who perform abortions, and that by calling abortion the unjust killing of a human being, we are setting abortionists up for violent acts because they will then be killed by people who believe that abortion is wrong. And the argument goes that, well, gee, hey, you're calling abortion murder, you're calling abortion wrong, and that means then that some people are going to hear that and think they would be justified to go out and commit acts of violence against an abortionist. But this is really a silly argument. Let's take an organization like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They claim that drunk drivers kill innocent human beings. Does it follow from that any action that is taken against a drinker is the result of somebody calling drunk driving a bad thing? That's just silly. What we need to look at is, are there good reasons to believe that drunk driving puts innocent people in harm's way? And the answer is yes, there is good reason for thinking that. If you drive drunk, you are putting people at risk. That's the issue. The issue is not your individual speech.
You mentioned one of these arguments a moment ago. I want you to address it going into this break. That can take the form of an ad hominem. You know, are you willing to see abortionists executed, or are you going to throw women in jail, kind of a thing? And it takes the form of an ad hominem, but behind it, or embedded within it, perhaps, is a legitimate question: what should be the penalty for these things that are called crimes? Shouldn't that question itself be taken seriously by the pro-lifer?
It should be. However, how we answer it does not speak to the central issue of what is the unborn. My answer to the question is, should women be prosecuted? My answer is, that depends. And of course, people hear that and they go, well, what do you mean by that? Well, in any crime today, how we prosecute the person guilty of the crime depends on circumstances that relate to it. We don't just take people and automatically send them to the gas chamber because they commit a homicide. There are circumstances that we look at. There are things that relate to the crime that we look at. And no jury is going to say, yep, that's it. You took a human life. You go to the gas chamber. We look at the evidence. We look at the circumstances. And the circumstances will always play a role in how we prosecute a crime. But my general answer is this, Todd. Why is it unreasonable to think that if you take a human life without justification, that there shouldn't be legal consequences?
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute. He's going to be leading a workshop titled Making Abortion Unthinkable, Saturday, January the 21st at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. It's part two of our five-part weekly series on bad ways to argue about abortion today, attacking the person rather than the argument. You can find out more about this workshop that Scott will be leading at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis on January the 31st under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. It's called Making Abortion Unthinkable, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. When we come back, more with Scott, 10 more minutes in the program, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. We've talked a bit about the ad hominem arguments directed against pro-lifers, but there's some self-discipline called for here. What about pro-lifers making ad hominems themselves? We'll talk about that after this.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His Word firmly and faithfully. Issues Etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
A pro-life victory in Uruguay.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Uruguay's president, Tabaré Vázquez, recently vetoed a bill that would have legalized abortion in that country during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. The Uruguayan Senate, which passed the bill 17-13, does not have enough votes to override the veto. In defending his action, President Vázquez, who is a member of the center-left Broad Front Party, said, "Our laws cannot ignore the reality of the existence of human life in the gestation period, as scientific evidence clearly shows." Vázquez is an oncologist with four children, one of whom is adopted.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. The last 10 minutes with Scott Klusendorf, talking about bad ways to argue about abortion today, attacking the person rather than the argument. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. We've talked a bit about the ad hominems leveled against pro-lifers, but pro-lifers are guilty of this themselves. I'm wondering, you often hear this, and it's sensationalistic. I wonder if it qualifies as an ad hominem. While it might be altogether true, often we hear about how despicable the abortionist is as a person. And I'm wondering whether or not that also avoids the real person we ought to be talking about in the abortion debate, Scott.
I think it does. Not that there isn't a valid point to be made that individuals that think killing innocent human beings is just fine ought to be a worthy subject we talk about. But if it is a substitute for making an argument, that's where the problem is.
Do you hear this? I mean, is it something that you found yourself?
I have seen it. I won't say that it's widespread. I think most pro-lifers, Todd, want to make a cogent defense for the pro-life view. They want to make the case that the unborn are human beings, that human beings should not have their lives taken without justification, and therefore elective abortion, because it does take the life of an innocent human being, is wrong. But when we focus too much on the individual abortionist and getting him, so to speak, we miss the wider philosophical issue about how we ought to, as a society, treat all human beings. This debate really comes down to two key questions. Number one, is the unborn a human being? Question number two, do all human beings, regardless of size, location, development, deserve an equal right to life or not? Those two questions are the crux of the debate. And when we focus the debate on individual people, whether they be abortionist or women choosing abortions, I think we miss the larger argument that needs to be made.
Here's one. I'm sure you've heard it. I've heard it, given our gender. Look, you're a man. And men, while they might care about this and have strongly held viewpoints, have no credible moral authority to speak on the issue of abortion. After all, you're a man.
I do get this quite often, and I remember one case up in Canada a number of years ago. A woman came up to me after a debate where I had laid out a scientific and philosophic defense for the pro-life view. I had argued scientifically the unborn were distinct, living, and whole members of the human family, and I cited embryology textbooks to make that case. I then cited philosophic evidence to make the claim that the unborn differed from us in ways that were not essential to their status as human beings. In other words, differences of size and level of development do not justify killing one human being and not killing another. Well, at the end of that debate, a woman came up to me and said, look, the primary flaw with your argument is you're a man and you can't get pregnant. And I very graciously asked her, well, tell me how my gender matters. She would hear none of it, Todd. Her basic argument was, I don't care about your scientific evidence. I don't care about your philosophic case. All I know is you're a man. You can't get pregnant. And if you can't get pregnant, this is not your issue. And I looked at her and said, well, how do you know that I'm a man? And she said, well, you've got a deep voice. And when I reminded her that Joan Rivers did too, that didn't seem to advance our conversation much. But the reality I was trying to get her to see was that gender doesn't have any bearing whatsoever on the arguments one is making. Suppose I am a man. Can my arguments be right? And she didn't want to go there. She just wanted to focus on the fact that I wasn't the right gender. She wanted to attack me personally instead of dealing with the evidence I was presenting for the full humanity of the unborn. And as a result, she was blinded to the crux of this debate, which centers on the question, what is the unborn?
I wonder, again, hypothetically, had it not been Scott Klusendorf there, but perhaps your wife or your sister or something had come in and had to fill in for you because you were under the weather and made the same presentation. Cindy Klusendorf today and sitting in for Scott, she certainly wouldn't have had that argument. Do you think she would have heard the arguments?
I don't think so. She would have just come up with a different one. Why are you betraying our gender by speaking of the pro-life issue would have been the argument then. And you raise a good point, Todd. Pro-life women use the same exact arguments as pro-life men, which means you have to answer the argument rather than just attack the person because you don't like their gender. And by the way, if men can't speak on abortion, we need to reverse Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy, because after all, that decision was decided by 9 men.
Interesting. Interesting. Very good point. Is this another one, perhaps a not-so-subtle form of the ad hominem? You only hold those positions against abortion because you're a Christian or because your religion tells you to. You're a religious person.
That can be an ad hominem. It can also be a more sophisticated argument that says anything that smacks of religion is questionable in terms of metaphysics. It's mere personal preference, and religious truth claims don't count as real knowledge. Therefore, your pro-life position is not real knowledge. But there is an ad hominem that says, look, this is your religious view, and your motivation for being pro-life is religious. Well, maybe it is, and maybe it isn't. But how does that change the status of the unborn? Just take theism in general. People love to say, well, the only reason you're a theist, the only reason you believe in God is because you're psychologically weak. Well, maybe I am, and maybe I'm not. But what does that have to do with the evidence for God's existence? Could God still exist even if I am psychologically weak? In the case of abortion, could the unborn still be human even if my motivation for doing pro-life stems from religious foundations? And the answer is, of course, the unborn can be human regardless of what my motivation is. What matters is the scientific evidence that shows the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings, and the philosophic evidence that shows there's no difference between the embryo we once were and the adults we are today that would justify killing us at that earlier stage of development. That's the evidence that needs to be dealt with, not what my alleged motivation is for doing pro-life work in the first place.
Time for a quick call and response from Ann in St. Louis. Hi, Ann.
Hi, I know this is getting to the end of the show. I've been thinking of this lately, and I don't know if you could use this or not, but I've been thinking that, you know, a woman has never given birth to a rock or a turtle or a puppy or a kitten. They're going to give birth to a human being. Can you use that kind of an argument or not?
Thank you very much, Ann. Absolutely. And what you're articulating there is a solid biological principle known as biogenesis, and that is that living things reproduce after their own kind. Dogs produce dogs, cats produce cats, and humans produce humans. And a variation of the point you've made, which is very well made, I might add, is to ask people, how is it possible for two human parents to create offspring that is not human but later becomes human? You see, they need to answer that question. It's not enough to say, well, you're religious, therefore you think the unborn are human, or you're a man, what right do you have to speak on this issue? They really do need to get to that question of what is the unborn, and your observation gets us to that point.
With only 30 seconds, why don't pro-lifers need to resort to the ad hominem argument attacking the person rather than the argument?
For two reasons, Todd. Number one, we are called as Christians to be gracious ambassadors, and that means we need to stick to the truth, present the truth, and not go after people personally. Secondly, the facts are on our side. The facts of embryology establish that the unborn are distinct, living, whole members of the human family, and philosophically, we can argue very strongly and persuasively that there's no relevant difference between that embryo we once were and the adults we are today that would justify killing us at that former stage. That case alone is enough to make our stance a persuasive one, and we don't need to resort to name-calling.
Next Wednesday, we're going to continue our series on bad ways to talk about abortion. Next time, the mistake of assuming what you're trying to prove with about 20 seconds. What will we be talking about that next Wednesday?
Most arguments for abortion rights, not all, but most assume the unborn aren't human. And if you used a two-year-old instead of a fetus to make that claim, we would immediately see that the argument they're giving for abortion rights does not hold up. And that's what we'll talk about next time.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's going to be leading a workshop titled Making Abortion Unthinkable, Saturday, January the 31st at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. You can find out more about Life Training Institute and Scott's workshop later this month at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Scott, thanks for being our guest.
Todd, always good to be on your excellent program.
We keep our eye on the ball. That's really what it is. The stakes are too high for us to engage in spurious, specious, and dead-end arguments on either side, be it the pro-choice arguments against the pro-lifers, the pro-life arguments against pro-choice positions. We address the simple question, who is the unborn? We answer that question, and the answer is, I might say, irrefutable, although people continue to refute it. And if someone wants to take us on rather than the facts and the argument and the unborn, then we gently and carefully redirect them to the argument, to the center of this debate, who is the unborn? And we continue to plug away. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.